Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. What does it mean to be present? What most of us do, I mean, it's a great question because of course we are present. I mean, my body is here. I am in this moment. And in terms of my attention, very few of us are here. Most of us are either in the past or the future, whether it's the long time ago past, our childhood past, or whether it's 5 minutes ago past. Can't believe he said that to me. Can't believe that happened. Oh my God. Whether it's the distant future, what's going to happen to my children? Will I ever have children? Or whether it's the immediate future. God, I wonder what's for dinner. And everything in between. But very few of us are actually right here. And the tragedy is that you're no better off being 5 minutes away than you are being 50 years down the line. I mean, it's no better off to be thinking about dinner than to be thinking about whether you're going to have kids or what's going to happen to them. Because both of them remove you from this moment. So being present literally means that my mind and my body are in the same place. Body is here. Body cannot be anywhere other than the present. As those of us who are aging a little too rapidly realize sadly, God, wouldn't it be nice? I'll take the, you know, wisdom of today, but if I could have the body of 20 years ago, God, wouldn't that be nice? Unfortunately, the body can't be anything other than present moment. But the mind has a little bit more liberty. And the mind can be anywhere, which is where you get all of those sayings about how the mind can be either your best friend or your worst enemy. Because literally, how you feel about this moment is what determines both your present and your future. Because how you feel about this moment is what's going to determine about how you feel the next moment. Because you carry yourself in. The emotions that you're creating, the thoughts that you're having, the patterns of thought, the habits that you're creating, well, they stay with you. And so this is where your mind can be the best friend or the worst enemy. The mind in the present, aligned with the body. You know, we talk about uniting the mind and the body. Well, here it is on the most basic level. If my body's here and my mind is in, you know, Paris, as Pujya Swamiji always says, without a visa, without a ticket, I'm not in any kind of alignment. I might be able to do fantastic yoga postures. I could stand on my head. I could do a great posture. You could say, ah, she's in great alignment. But I'm not. Because even my own mind and my own body are not in alignment. So the very most basic level is where my body is, my mind should also be there. Even deeper, where my breath is, my mind should be there. And so being present is, I'm not in the past, I'm not in the future. I'm right here. Now, an important caveat with that is, that doesn't mean I don't plan for my future. Being present is not the opposite of being planned. There are times in which the present moment activity needs to be planning for the future. Okay. We're going on vacation. Summer break. Where are we going to go? Okay, so we've got 5 people in our family. We need to, you know, will all 3 of the kids fit in the back seat? If not, okay, we need to rent a car that fits 3 in the back seat. Present moment, planning. Kids' summer break. That is the present moment. But when present moment is, kids are telling you about what happened at school that day, but your mind is on which car you're going to take on the summer break, you're not there with them. And they feel it and they know it. Mom, Dad, you're not listening. We all know that. You know what it feels like to be talking to someone who's not there. And the greatest gift that we can give ourselves and our loved ones is to literally be there. Because you can only connect in the present moment. All of that which is actually really valuable in life, which we really want at the core, is only available in the present moment. You can only be happy in the present moment. You cannot be happy tomorrow or next week. You cannot be happy last year. I mean, you may have been happy last year. But when your body is now here today, that happiness of last year is not here. Your happiness for now has to be here, in this moment, or it doesn't exist. Your peace has to be here. You cannot be peaceful next week unless you're peaceful now. You cannot be in love. You can only experience love in the present moment. So actually, all of that which really is valuable, connection, love, joy, peace, we have to be here to experience it. You could be in a place of love. You could be with your husband or wife. You could be with your family. You could be with your loved ones. You could be in the Ganga Aarti. You could be in the most love-inducing, peace-inducing, joy-inducing situations and places and relationships, but if your mind is not there, you're not experiencing the love. You're not experiencing the peace. You're not experiencing the joy. And so being present is bringing the mind to where the body is. This very moment, this breath, this drop of water, this sound, this traffic jam, this tense board meeting. That's what being present is, wherever we are. And what you find is when my mind is actually aligned with my body rather than scrambling to figure out how to get me out of here or worrying about the ramifications of the present moment for the future, I'm actually able to handle the present moment. When my mind isn't there, I'm not even my own good ally. When I get all worried about, oh my God, what does this now mean for the future? Well, I'm not able to address the present moment in a way that's efficient or effective for my future. When I'm there, not caught up in my anxiety, not caught up in something that isn't real. I'm actually able to address the moment because I'm there. So it's our best friend and the best friend actually of all of our loved ones as well. And the, as I said, the best gift you can give yourself and anyone is just learn how to be present right there, right now. And the breath is your best ally in that. When you bring the awareness to the breath, it tends to ground you right there and root you right there.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's rain.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. What is the difference between the divine and the divine mother? And what is the relationship between them? So, in the Hindu tradition, in the spiritual tradition here, we don't divide the divine in terms of presence. We tend to describe the divine based on either different actions or simply different reflections. So the main descriptions are what we call the Trinity of the Divine. Brahma who creates, Vishnu who sustains, and Shiva who dissolves. Sometimes we say destroys, but it's not destroys with that malicious negative connotation so much as destruction that makes room for new birth. And so that Trinity is actually a cycle. We get creation, we get sustenance, and then we get disillusion that makes room, that creates space for new birth. All of the rest is simply seen as different reflections of, different manifestations of the same God. And that's really the core teaching, is there is one God. In fact, if you go even deeper, the teaching is there is nothing but God. It's not there is one God separate from us sitting somewhere with lots of manifestations like one sun, lots of reflections in water. But actually there is nothing but God. And therefore everything that you see is simply an embodiment of the divine. Like every wave is an embodiment of the ocean. That's the deepest, corest truth. Nothing but God. Everything is just an embodiment of, a manifestation of that divine. when we talk about the divine and the divine mother, again, the divine is all, infinite, the creator, the sustainer, the dissolver, all of them without borders, without boundaries, the energy of those three actions. The divine is also that which is created, that which is sustained, that which is dissolved or destroyed. It's not just the energy of creation. It's the creation itself. Not just the energy of sustenance, but that which is being sustained itself. The mother is typically the one, when we think of the mother, who creates, right? I mean, life comes out of a mother's womb. Yes, the father is important. Without the father, you don't get creation. But nonetheless, we think of mothers as the womb of creation. The mother gives birth. The mother tends to be the one who sustains. The mother suckles the child, feeds the child, cares for the child. Again, the fathers do as well. This is just stereotypical, but father doesn't suckle, mother suckles. So a lot of times we speak about the divine as the divine mother, when we're talking about it just as the fullness of the energy. So for a moment, forget the different forms, forget the different names, think just of that infinite experience. Well, in many ways, it's the energy of the mother, that which creates, that which sustains. But also, when we talk about reflections of, manifestations of, embodiments of, and we talk about Brahma and Vishnu and Shiva, well, we also have very specific embodiments of the divine in the feminine form. Each of whom could be referred to as the divine mother, the goddess, whether we say Mahalakshmi, whether we say Mahasaraswati, whether we say Ma Durga, Kali Ma, different names, different energies, but they're all the divine mother. So there really is no distinction. It's just different ways of describing that same energy. So on the most basic and divided level, the relationship between them, when you think about, when we talk about how our male manifestations of the divine always have a female counterpart, so the energy of creation, the energy of sustenance, the energy of disillusion, well, there's always the goddess. Because what the goddess brings is Shakti, energy, literally. The word, in the Hindi language we have words, in Sanskrit language, words are either masculine or feminine, unlike English. But the actual noun is masculine or feminine, like French or like Spanish. The term for that creative energy, Shakti, is feminine. So is the term for that which is created, Prakriti, the nature, Srishti, the creation. So interestingly, the divine feminine is both the power that creates as well as that which is created. They're all feminine. But again, that's on the divided level, the level that says Shiv Parvati, Lakshmi Narayan. That's on the level of form, the level of division. When we go deeper, as we said, it's all God. There is no distinction. And so when you go to that level, then whether you're worshiping the divine with the name of Krishna or Ram or Shiva or Vishnu or Durga or Lakshmi or Saraswati, or it doesn't matter, or just the Mother Goddess. It doesn't matter. Because the energy is masculine and feminine. It's all, it's everything. It's all combined. Somebody once asked me, I was doing an interview for a book that was being written about the feminine spiritual leaders and the feminine energy, and somebody was asking me about Pooja Swamiji, my guru, and about him as a male guru. And I said, well, you know, I said, he's more genderless. And then I stopped and I said, actually, he's not. He's actually genderful. Meaning, it's not neither, but it's actually both. That even in a human body, he actually embodies both of those energies. And so at the highest and the deepest level, the divine is both and all and more and everything, because it's all divine. And so the relationship is really just like, you know, looking at the ocean from one cliff versus looking at the ocean from another cliff versus looking at the ocean from the beach. You're looking at the same thing. It's the same. Just different viewpoints, different names. But it's all one.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. What if you have a very strong feeling about something that is going to happen in the future? How do you stay in the present moment without judging? Well, until and unless it's happened, it's not your present moment existence. And what we know actually now from science a lot is that the more you think about something, the more you actually create it. That actually thinking a lot about something brings it into your experience, both good things as well as bad things. So there's now a whole sort of science about even just setting intentions and even just the way to pray. So for example, teaching people to say in practices of gratitude, thank you God for my health, even if you're not healthy. Thank you God for my health, rather than thank you God for taking away this heart disease. Because the simple repetition of heart disease, heart disease, heart disease, thank you, God, for keeping me away from getting heart disease. Well, now what they're talking about is that the simple repetition of that energy actually brings it into your life. So it's a whole other subject, but nonetheless, if it's not your present moment reality. Doesn't mean you don't think about it, but it means don't let it encroach upon the present moment reality. If it's something that has to be dealt with, set aside a time and think about it. I mean, we all have things in our lives that we have to plan for that are going to have to be dealt with at some point. Kids are going to go off to college. Is there enough money to send them to college? You know, parents are going to need health care at the end of their lives. Is there enough money to give them health care at the end of their lives? There's going to be a rainy season. Did we fix the leak in the roof? There are things that have to be addressed. You know, you could have a premonition in the dry season about your roof leaking in the rainy season. And if you simply keep thinking about it, yeah, your roof's going to leak because you haven't fixed the roof. So you let the premonition or the feeling or whatever it be, or the anxiety even, let it tell you, okay, this is what I need to plan. Set aside the time, sit down, plan it, do research if you need to do research, whatever the situation may be. And once you've done that, then you just leave it in God's hands. Then you've done the best. You found out the best type of roof. You've got it put in. Yeah, there could be such a heavy rain that even the best roof collapses, but that's not in your hands. So you do your planning as best as you can, and then you leave the rest to God. Knowing, of course, that which is going to unfold is that which is supposed to unfold, and that which we're all being called to do is not change the course of that which is supposed to unfold, but simply step up to the plate fearlessly of what our life is calling us to do. That's all we're being asked to do. Step up to the plate fearlessly. Doesn't mean recklessly, doesn't mean rashly, but with courage, with faith in the universe, in yourself, in your path, in your calling, in your love, in that which ignites you inside. Step up to the plate with planning. One of Pooja Swamiji's other favorite sayings is failing to plan is planning to fail. So with planning, acceptance in and of itself is radical. Radical acceptance is sort of a redundancy, but yeah, no point in saying both of them. Acceptance is radical. It's not what most of us are taught. Especially those of us from the West. Indians have much more of a culture of acceptance. Jaise Bhagwan ki chaho, whatever is God's plan. This is a very, very typical thing you'll hear them saying, not just about tiny little superficial things. Loved ones perish, houses burn down. Stock market crashes, they lose everything. Oh, must have been God's plan. There's an incredible, incredible level of resiliency that they have that those of us from the West just don't have. Sadly, because we haven't been raised in a culture of acceptance. We've been raised in a culture of stand up, you know, assertiveness training. Literally, people pay money. Swamiji always laughs at it. You'll see advertisements for, you know, a weekend assertiveness training workshop. And he cracks up. He says, this is ridiculous. We need acceptance training. People pay money to learn how to, you know, get other people to do what they want. This isn't life. But this is the culture of the West, is assert yourself. What's in it for you? And so we really spend most of our lives trying to figure out how to make things exactly as we want them. And of course, the culture gives us an endless number of possibilities. And so we have this delusion that we really can pick and choose and do and create. And it, And then when you're faced with life situations that you can't just assert yourself and say, that's not how I want it to be. You better change. I'm not going to accept it. I'm going to blah, blah, blah. Situations that it doesn't matter how much you shout. It doesn't matter how much you criticize. Situation is not going to change. Doesn't matter how much you do. We have to call it radical acceptance. Because it is radical for us. We're not raised in a culture of learning to accept. So yeah, when you have an expectation that things are going to be a certain way, and then they're not, or you know now you've got this premonition, as you say, that they're not going to be like that. Yeah, the sooner you can accept it, the sooner you're going to find peace. The only thing really standing between us and peace is our lack of acceptance. And if we're really deeply honest with ourselves, what we realize is very few situations in life change because we don't accept them. People don't change. I mean, how many of us have spent so much time of our lives, wasted so much time of our lives trying to get other people to change? How many times have I told you? When are you going to learn? But people don't change. What changes, I mean, it's not that nobody changes, but they don't change based on us berating them to change. They don't change because our agenda is that they should change. People only change when within them something shifts. And I'll give you a secret. Very, very, very few people, I almost said nobody, but I want to say few on the off chance that maybe sometime somewhere it happened. Very few people have deep internal shifts of life paths, of who they are, because someone else criticized and berated them into it. Or because someone didn't accept them into it. Those are not the stuff that deep internal shifts are made of. And so our choice then really is accept or be miserable. We think the choice is accept or it will change. But sadly, that's not the choice. The only choice is accept it or be miserable. It's not going to change anyway. The only thing you have control over is your own reaction to it. So if you know something's going to happen that is not what you want to happen, but it's not something you have any control over, and you're very well aware of that, well, the only thing to do is work within yourself of how you can accept it. And the last part about this is acceptance does not mean that you give in. It's not the throwing in the towel. A lot of us think that that's what acceptance means, that it means that I've given up. It's not a weak thing. Acceptance does not mean, okay, I give up. It means I have recognized that this situation is not going to shift based on what I want. And my only choice, as I said, is accept or be miserable. I don't want to be miserable. I'm on a path to enlightenment. And if not enlightenment, I'm on a path to peace. I'm on a path to joy. I'm on a path to a spiritual life. Grudges, anger are the stuff that thwarts us from that peace, from that joy, from that enlightenment. Those are the blockages. The light is there, the joy is there, the peace is there, the enlightenment is there, it's all there. But the hurdles are within me. Of all the things that I won't accept, that I can't accept. And so as I start accepting them one by one, what I find is that space within me is created. I can breathe. When I can breathe, light flows in. When light flows in, joy flows in, peace flows in. And then ironically, what you find is that's the stuff from which, if it's ever going to happen, situations shift. That's the energy that shifts situations. You can't go into it with that as your agenda, of course. Why haven't you changed yet? Look how peaceful I've become. It doesn't work like that. But when it does happen, ironically, what you find is in the space of your acceptance of the moment or of the person or of the situation is actually where the change happens. And the very last part about that is acceptance doesn't mean I think it's okay. We have loved ones who are drug addicts. We have loved ones who are alcoholics. We have loved ones who choose paths for their lives that we know are not right, or that are not right in our objective view of what a life path should look like. Accepting it doesn't mean I think that's okay. Yeah, that's great that you're a heroin addict. I've accepted it. No problem. Shoot up as much as you want. I'm there with you. That's not what it means. What it means is I've accepted that this is how it is right now. That nothing I say or do is going to change that. Doesn't mean I like it. Doesn't mean I condone it. Doesn't mean if I had a magic wand, I wouldn't change it. But it means I have recognized I don't have a magic wand. And I have recognized that the only thing here that shifts and budges is my own peace, my own anxiety. And so we accept very much for the same reason that we forgive. Not for the other person, not because it's all right or good, but simply because our lack of acceptance or our lack of forgiveness is what keeps us from being in peace.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. The concept of my internal joy, my internal peace, being not just joy and peace, but actually health. There's two aspects of this. One aspect is on the very, very physical basic. What we know on a biological and chemical and medical level is that stress causes more diseases than anything else on earth. More than any other single habit, stress leads to disease. We know this. Ranging from the obvious things like heart disease, even into things like immunity of colds and flus. I don't have time now to get into the whole biological way that it works, but actually the impact that our nervous system has, our sympathetic nervous system, which gets aroused when we're stressed, directly diminishes our immune system. Get stressed, lose immunity. This is a very, very direct medical reaction. Now, the reason for that is actually very simple, and it's actually a beautiful part of God's plan. Evolutionarily, stress was supposed to be very short-lived. A tiger is chasing you. A bear is chasing you. Okay? A warring tribe has just come in and is trying to take over your village and your women. Well, you need all the energy of your body to be able to fight it off. And so all of the things that are not needed in that very moment, the body shuts them down to take that energy, that blood, that prana, that shakti, and to send it into your limbs so that you can literally fight or flee. And so things like reproduction, digestion, immune system, all of those systems shut down, and all of the energy that usually goes to things like our reproductive organs, women's menstruation systems, digestion, our immune response, all of that energy goes into our arms and legs. It's a brilliant, brilliant thing. When stress lasts a half an hour or 2 hours. But because now so many of us live in stress, and as we were talking about, stress is now no longer caused by tigers running after us, but it's caused by our children or our parents or our spouses or our employers not doing what we want them to do. It's caused by traffic patterns not being what we want them to be, or the stock market not being where we want it to be, or our weight not being where we want it to be, or whatever the trigger for us might be. And so we now live in stress, which means that we're seeing all kinds of digestive problems, reproductive issue problems, and immune system problems. Because those systems are shutting down. Okay, so that's on the very most basic biological chemical. When our internal situation, our swasthiti, the condition of the self, sthiti is situation or condition, swa is the self. When our condition of the self is out of balance, it creates disease. Okay, so that's the most basic. But what we also know is that on a deeper level, the impact of what we're thinking on the very state of our being and the state of balance within our being is a huge, huge impact. We know that what you think, and this goes beyond just stress, what you think, what you believe even, people's spiritual practices have direct impacts also on their immune systems, have direct impacts on likelihood to have a second heart attack after you've had a first heart attack. Literally, I'll give you just one example. Dartmouth University, a really top research-based university, an Ivy League school, fantastic medical college and hospital in America, did a study where they took people who had come in after their first heart attack. And along with their intake form, they asked them one other question. How religious or spiritual are you? And there were three options. Either very religious, not religious, or very religious, somewhat religious, and not religious at all. And people had to tick a box. 6 months later, of those who had checked the box not religious at all, about 11% of them had had a second and fatal heart attack. Now, don't worry. Turns out that's actually pretty standard. I'm not a cardiologist, but it turns out that that's pretty standard percentages of people having a second fatal heart attack within 6 months of the first. But those who had checked very, guess what percent had had one? Anyone guess? Zero. Not just low percentage, zero people, not one. There is almost an inoculation. I could go on all night about this. This is actually what I did my dissertation in. But there's almost an inoculation that being spiritual, and it doesn't matter what your religion is, but being connected to something that is higher, that is deeper, that is bigger than just the physical body. We know it makes us happier. That's not news. We know it makes us more peaceful. That's also not news. But we also now know it makes us physically healthier. We're learning slowly, slowly, slowly. I'll give you one more example on how simple thoughts and emotions impact our physical health. So one last example on this. The standard flu virus binds, I'm going to try to do this without getting too technical. The standard flu virus binds to a receptor. So the way that the cells of the body work is kind of like a lock and key mechanism. So if you can visualize all the cells of the body being covered with locks, and the chemicals, whether it's what we eat, so it goes in through our bloodstream, whether it's the hormones that we're secreting from different glands in the body, or even whether it's the neurotransmitters that we're secreting from our brain. Those are the keys. So when a key fits a lock, it opens and the cell opens, and therefore that's when you get changes in the cell. You cannot impact a cell if you don't have a key that opens its lock. You have to have the key that opens that lock for it to impact the cell. Okay, so what we now know is that the standard flu virus is a key that binds to the receptor, to the lock, that's the same as a neurotransmitter that we secrete called norepinephrine, which tends to be secreted during times of a lot of things, but also great joy. Great bliss. Now, what does that mean in real life? It means you're in a room of 10 people. One person has the flu. They're coughing all over the place. They're not covering their mouths. Not all 10 people are going to get sick. Some of them are. Well, aside from all the other things that impact our immune system, if all of those locks are already full with the key of norepinephrine, there's no place for the flu virus to bind. the locks are full. But if there is no norepinephrine that's flowing through, and therefore the locks are all wide open, there's lots and lots of places for that flu virus to bind. So that's just one example of it. But we now know it's not just the sort of fuzzy feely of, oh, you're glowing, you know, you must be very healthy. Well, yeah, there's actually a very direct physical biochemical reason. Now, the last important point to mention on this, though, is what we think and feel is not the only thing that contributes to your health, because it's very important that we not flip to the other side, because the other end of the pendulum swing is, oh, you're sick, means you're not meditating well enough. Oh, you're sick, we'll just change your thoughts. Oh, you've got cancer or heart disease, we'll just change how you think. It's not that simple. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. And so it's really important to hold both sides of the pendulum deeply in our awareness. Yes, what we think has a huge impact. Yes, our stress level has a huge impact. Yes, what we believe has a huge impact. What we eat has a huge impact. And yes, there are hundreds of other things that are also impacting it. And so it's not your fault if you're sick. We should not walk around and tell people who are sick to just change how they think. Because what it does is it undermines who they are. And of course, then that leads to them feeling badly and guilty and sad, which, as we know, isn't healthy. So the very best thing that you can do is empower people to feel not victims of it, because we're not victims of any of it. We're active participants in it. Some of our active participation is unconscious, expression of genes, for example, in different ways. Some of our participation is conscious. And the best that we can do is to activate the conscious participation in our own health. And one of the biggest and most powerful ways is by changing how we think and how we feel. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.